My name is Bruce Gagnon. I live in Bath, Maine, in the United States, and I work for the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Our website is spaceforpeace.org. We were created in 1992 to prevent the arms race from moving into space. And in recent years, our biggest obstacle has been the United States, that is backing out of international treaties and refuses to negotiate any bans on weapons in space, something that both Russia and China for more than 20 years have been annually submitting at the United Nations.
Yeah, but I'm sure that the Pentagon, if we ask them, will be saying, Bruce, that look, space is a contested area and the United States has got to be out there. It's got to be making sure that other superpowers don't dominate space.
That's right. They do say that, but the dead giveaway is a 1998 document called Vision for 2020. This is at a time when the Soviet Union had collapsed. The Russian economy was devastated. They were not really doing much at all in space. China was way back behind everybody. And the United States put out this planning document called Vision for 2020 that said, we will control space, we will dominate space, we will deny other countries access to space. And in fact, above their Space Command headquarters in Colorado doorway of their building, they have a logo that reads Master of Space. So it's always been the intention of the United States since the end of World War II, when the Nazi rocket scientists that built the V-1 and V-2 rockets for Hitler, when they were brought here to the U.S. to create the U.S. space program, it's always been the intention of the U.S. to be the master of space.
What's the situation, though? Because are we in the, you know, I can remember growing up with the James Bond films and this idea that one nation, or even actually as in Fleming's novels, an independent force, an evil force trying to set one superpower against another, could actually dismantle satellites, capture satellites, destroy satellites, and even, you know, manned space vehicles. Is that capability exist at the moment?
I think all sides are creeping up on that capability, and that's one reason why Russia and China have been very anxious to create some new international law. There is the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, but at the UN, but it only banned weapons of mass destruction in space, which meant nuclear weapons. Now, the weapons that are being developed are called weapons of selective destruction that fall outside of that treaty. And so clearly, Russia and China understand that we don't need an arms race in space. We can't afford one. And we'd rather be using that money for development, for taking care of our people in our own country.
Yeah, but it's very unlikely in China that you would be able to do what you're doing in the United States. You know, that the Chinese government, the police would be straight onto you, Bruce.
Well, that's what we're told by the U.S. and U.K. governments. I'm not so sure. If I was speaking in favor of keeping space for peace in China, I might be heralded as a hero. Who really knows?
Anyway, we've been hearing quite a lot recently about this whole thing of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. How real do you think this is, and what are the implications for East-West relations?
Well, it reminds me of the U.S. and U.K. media barrage in 2003, claiming that Saddam Hussein in Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, which then got whipped up into a Western media frenzy, and then excused and allowed for the shock and awe invasion of Iraq by the U.S. and the U.K. It turned out to be a friggin' disaster. And then afterwards, of course, we learned it wasn't true. I've been to Russia now twice, to Moscow, to St. Petersburg, to Crimea. I've been to Donbass, in Ukraine, right along the Russian border. I've been to Odessa in Ukraine, and I've seen for myself that the people of Russia are not in any way, nor I believe the government in any way, is trying to recreate the Soviet Union as they're accused of doing. But I've been studying NATO expansion for many, many years that has literally surrounded Russia and is now being expanded into an international, NATO is, into an international military alliance, and they're surrounding China as well. And so NATO is really trying to prove its relevance in this world today, and they have to have an enemy to do that. And so they're increasingly antagonizing and encircling Russia. The U.S. and many of its NATO allies orchestrated the coup d'etat during the Obama administration in 2014. I followed that entire thing day by day on the internet, and I've followed that whole story ever since. It's very clear to me that Russia is having military maneuvers inside its own country. Now, I'm 69 years old. I've never heard of a country being vilified globally for having military maneuvers inside its own country, particularly when the United States and NATO are arming and training what I consider to be Nazis inside of Ukraine and sending them to the Russian border in the Donbass region and killing, since 2014, more than 10,000 Russian ethnic Ukrainian citizens whose only crime is they speak Russian. Because, you know, after that coup in 2014, the first thing the new government did was install right-wing leadership that the United States selected, the famous Victoria Nuland phone call, where she said, F the EU, we're going to pick who's going to be the new leader. And the first law that was passed after this quote-unquote new government was established was making the speaking of Russian in Ukraine illegal when half the country speaks Russian. What you many people don't know is that in the western part of Ukraine, near Poland, there has long been a Nazi love affair and with fascism. And when Hitler came through Ukraine during World War II, as he was invading the Soviet Union, there was a Ukrainian nationalist named Stefan Bandera who put on a Nazi uniform and organized his local compatriots, and they helped kill thousands of Jews, Poles, and other people inside of Ukraine. Today, he's been honored with a statue by the new Ukrainian government. I have a friend who has a son in the U.S. Special Forces in the Army, and he's been sent to Western Ukraine on two occasions, at least, to train these Nazis and to dress them up in brand new uniforms supplied by the United States and what they call the Ukrainian Army Special Forces. And they're then sent to the eastern part of Ukraine to attack these Russian ethnic Ukrainians who live in the Donbass region, whose, again, their only crime is they speak Russian. It's said that these are Russian separatists, but the truth is, after this passage in 2014 of this law saying Ukraine was the official language and it was illegal to speak Russian, local people in that Donbass region in the eastern Ukraine began to collect signatures on petitions saying, we want a federated Ukraine. We want to be able to make decisions about what language we use. We want to elect our own local politicians and not have them appointed by this new fascist government. And they had peaceful rallies and marches. It was then that these Nazis from Western Ukraine were sent, with the assistance of the United States and various NATO countries, they were sent to the east and began attacking the people in the Donbass. And that's what created this war that's been going on ever since. So Russia has always said if the Ukrainian government does a major invasion of this Donbass region, it's called Lugansk and Donetsk, the two big cities there along the Russian border, that they would protect those people. That's the so-called crime that Russia is being accused of today.
Yes, but do you think that this is a realistic possibility of fighting here? I noticed, by the way, that the British are, some British soldiers are out there training the Ukrainians in the use of these handheld anti-tank missiles, weapons that we have sold them. So there's obviously some money being made out of the idea that the Ukrainians need to be, and obviously some, you know, exchange between troops and this sort of thing into Ukraine. Do you think Ukraine is going to join NATO soon?
They want to. They're begging to. But I think Russia's demand that neither Ukraine nor Georgia should be allowed into NATO, because if they were allowed into NATO, that would then allow NATO to bring in various missile systems. The United States has built recently U.S. first strike launch facilities in Romania and Poland aimed at Russia. They can fire Tomahawk cruise missiles that could deliver nuclear warheads and reach Russia in a very short time. And so Russia fears that as NATO advances towards their borders, that they're going to put even more missile batteries into those countries.
But hang on, these missiles are part of the missile defense shield. They are defensive.
They're two different kind of missiles that are now at the Romania and Poland. One is the SM-3, so-called missile defense interceptor, but the same launch platforms. All you do is push a button and the machine moves, and then you can put in the launch tubes, the Tomahawk cruise missiles. I live in Bath, Maine, where Navy Aegis destroyers are built, and it's this Aegis technology that is on board these U.S. destroyers that launches these same SM-3 interceptors and cruise missiles. And again, they can launch either one. And so they've taken that Aegis technology because they have the best track record of hitting targets. And they've put that in Romania and Poland, and they call it Aegis Ashore. So they, again, have the capability to launch first strike attack weapons at Russia. This is very destabilizing. Imagine that it's a Cuban Missile Crisis in reverse.
Back in 1962, it was actually NATO putting missiles into Turkey that prompted the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that was because the Russians said, well, the Soviets at the time said, we're going to be putting missiles into Cuba if you're going to put them into Turkey. So, well, I mean, really, ultimately, Bruce, the Russians can't really do anything about this. If Ukraine wants to join NATO, they can. And if the NATO then wants to put these missiles right next to, well, that would be very close to Moscow, there's nothing to stop them.
Well, maybe good sense might be something that should stop them. A sense of believing in mutual security, that I'm not secure if you're not secure. So if Russia's insecure, that means all of Europe and the United States and the rest of the world is not secure because we're on the edge of a nuclear war. There are generals, I promise you, in the United States military who today are saying that we could fight a nuclear war with Russia and win and survive. This is pure insanity. So I tell you that every one of these steps by NATO is outrageous, it's provocative, and it's aggressive. And the public, especially people living in Europe, should be pulling their hair out and screaming.
Okay, so what about latest developments up in space? I know that's your main concern. You know, what's been going on up there? It's something that we very rarely hear any news about. One of the stories I heard last year was that US satellites are actually being used by the Chinese government to help them with keeping surveillance on their citizens, for example.
I've never heard that.
Okay, well, I can forward you that story if you want. But what's going on up there? Is there an arms race going at full tilt up in space? What sort of weapons are up there and who's winning?
Well, the four countries, the U.S., Russia, China, and India have tested anti-satellite weapons and, you know, basically developing the capability to launch from the Earth into space and knock out a competitor's satellite. So four countries have now tested that technology. There are satellite jammers that a lot of countries are working on right now. It's basically a ground system that sends a signal into space that kind of jams up a particular country's satellite. Imagine if the United States, for example, wanted to do a first strike attack on Russia, they might try to jam Russia's eyes and ears in space so they couldn't see what's coming their way. So there's a change, somewhat of a change underway, because anti-satellite weapons, when you blow something up into space, what they call kinetic energy, smash into something, it creates a lot more space debris or space junk that is orbiting the planet at 15,000 miles an hour. And it's getting so crowded up there in space with all these satellites that are being launched for 5G by Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and others. The parking lot around the Earth, the orbits are getting so crowded and so full that many, many scientists are worried that we're going to have a cascading effect soon. Things start crashing into one another. And when that happens, guess what? The Earth goes dark, because virtually everything we do on this planet, you and I talking right now, hooked up through a satellite, basically, cell phones, internet banking, weather prediction, airport, air traffic control, you know, just everything we do on the planet hooked up via satellite. So if you have a war in space or continue this growing congestion of space, you're eventually going to have this collision that cascades, one thing crashes into another. They've long feared that the International Space Station, because it's so large, was going to be a prime target for this cascading effect. So anyway, the people that have been working on weapons in space suddenly have to change their approach, because we just can't have this shooting war in space where you blow everything up, because it's going to mean the destruction of all space technology orbiting the Earth. And at the same time, it's going to make the basically make it impossible to launch anything off the Earth after that happened, because it would be like a minefield around the planet. Or as astronaut Edgar Mitchell, one of the early moonwalkers, Apollo moonwalkers, who came to a demonstration I organized at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida in 1989, he called it a piranha-laced river, and we wouldn't be able to get through it. So that's why they're now talking about these jammers that could shut down somebody's satellite, but not necessarily destroy it and into pieces. So there's a whole reconfiguring going on right now, and it appears to me that there's a lot of uncertainty amongst the military about what kind of weapons technologies they can really safely create.
Yeah, but who's winning? Who do you think is dominating space at the moment?
U.S. is way ahead of everybody. China is coming on fast. Russia is lagging behind. You know, when you look at the military spending figures for those three countries, the U.S. spends, basically, when you add up all its various military intelligence, pots of gold inside in the Pentagon and in other agencies, the U.S. spends about $1 trillion a year. Russia is spending a very, very small, probably around $30 billion a year, something like that. I'm not accurate on that number. Scratch that number. Russia is spending a very small amount, equivalent to about what France spends, frankly, a year. That's why when people talk about how Russia wants to recreate the Soviet Union, it would be impossible to do it on their military budget. It's very clear that that's not what they intend to do. But again, the U.S. and NATO are using Russia as a whipping boy in order to, I think, justify the NATO alliance and also to justify increased military spending on behalf of the U.S. and NATO.
Bruce, can you just remind us where your website is, please?
Yeah, the website is space4peace.org.
Bruce Gagnon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.